Accession number 27803, Mr. Vic Stone, Reel 7. Now, we were talking about the conversion course at the 1665 Heavy Conversion Unit at Tilsbrook from about June 44 onwards. So, what do you remember of this course and anything that happened while you were there?
Well, several very interesting things happened there. The course was mainly, as I say, the pilot would have a co-pilot with him. Quite obviously, he'd never flown this before. We would go with the crew and we would do our job in the same way as the pilot would do his job. So we all had our exercises to do. Not a lot for us, more for the pilot. As we got further into the course, there was Butch, Jack and myself. Bill, Jack and myself, as far as I can recall, had to go to number one parachute training school at Ringway.
Now, what happened there?
I wondered why we had to go there. You could confirm when we went there on there, couldn't you, the date, to make sure I got
it's
it in right
in
order?
No.
The reason for going there, we weren't told. We were just told you're going there and you're going to do the paratroopers course. So we go to Ringway and...
It's under Airborne Division. This is in late July.
Was it?
So what happened at the course?
We had to do the full paratroopers course. In other words, we had to go into the hangars. We had to learn to... We would climb up the side of a hangar, up the steps, and you hang on to a rope, and the instructor would say, go or pull, and you just swing down. And as you swing down, he told you how to fold your own. You bring your legs up and your arms up, how to fold and how to hit the ground if you're on a parachute. This is one of the things that you're on. You've came down onto coconut matting, obviously. This will get a bit higher and a bit higher, and then there'll be a limit as to how far you went on what they called free swing. After that, you climb the aircraft hangar. You go right up to the top of the hangar. You walk along a gantry, and there'll be a platform built up out from this gantry. An iron bar across the top, and on the ends would be a large fan, just an ordinary fan. Wound around would be a parachute, would be a cord attached to a parachute harness. You put this parachute harness on and you sit on the edge of this gantry, and when you're told to jump, you just push yourself off and you go down. As the fan turns, the fan slows you down. So as you jump, you just free fall, you just jump and you just and you go down to the ground. And this is to get you used to jumping out of an aircraft and the how to feel on a free fall. You do this several times. You can do as many times as you want to. We thought it was quite good fun, and we used to go up and down, jump. But all these things were in this hangar, and there were instructors all the time, and they were calling you over, right, Mike, come over here on the horse. What do they call this horse? Not a hobby horse. What do they call it? It's a jumping horse, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Vaulting horse.
Vaulting horse. That's right. Yeah. And he'd get you, do so and so, and you do it. So you go jump on one way, and then you have to jump on the other way till you're conversant with all sort of ways how to manoeuvre yourself on and off this horse whilst moving, you see. Now, this will go on for quite a few days, and then I think... The first time we were there, if I can recall, we were taken out to an airfield somewhere. They had a barrage balloon there. Well, they had one or two barrage balloons there. And they had baskets attached underneath them. And there was six men would get in this basket. And you'd sit three either side. You had your parachute harness on. You had a rubber hat on. That was, when you jumped out, if you pushed yourself too hard, you'd hit the edge of this rim and you could knock yourself out. Anyway, you put this on, and on the command go, the instructor had already been up, checked your cord, checked your chute, make sure it was attached correctly, and then you just push yourself up and down, and then your parachute would open and you'd have a free fall parachute, because that was all done for you. I think the first one was about 600 feet. I think after that we went back to Ringway, to Tilstock again, from Ringway to Tilstock, and we were there.
So you just did the one balloon jump?
At that time, as far as I can, I may be a little bit wrong about this, but anyway, we did just the one, and we went back to Tilstock again, did a few more exercises, cross-country exercises, different things, and then we had to go back again to Ringway. And when we got to Ringway, we were taken from Ringway to Bewley, Wiltshire, Bewley, Lord, I can't think of his name, he's on every day now, isn't he? Lord Bewley, is it? We were taken there, and we were put there with the SOE and the SAS for manoeuvres, of all things. for a day, we were marched here, force march here, force march there, do drill with full pack, and bear in mind we were Air Force types and we were with the Army, so of course they used to take Mickey out of us, something terrible. However, we soldiered on, and then it came to one night when there was an exercise. We had to go out on an exercise, and you were given certain sealed orders. There's a man in charge of you. You were dropped way out in the country. You never knew where you were. Somewhere on Salisbury Plain, I think it was.
From a lorry, not
yes, yeah. And you were given your orders. When you were dropped, the man in charge of you was allowed to open his orders. He was told what he's got to find, what he's got to do, find the enemy, and all this sort of business, and given certain zones. To work in certain zones you must not work in. I think because at the time there were so many different army manoeuvres going on at the same time that they had to sort out different zones, otherwise A could get mixed with B, or B could get mixed with C. Anyway, we did this army manoeuvre across the fields and through the hedges. Eventually we got caught though. Instead of catching the enemy, we got caught because we went into a field which was full of corn stacks. But unfortunately the enemy had been dropped there beforehand, and they were all in these corn stacks. So when we got in the corn field, all these corn stacks just went, and we were caught. We'd been taken back to camp. Eventually we went back to Ringway, and then eventually back to Tilstock. Then again, I think we went to Ringway to do a jump, more parachute training, and a jump from an aircraft. And that was from a Whitley aircraft. We had to jump from a Whitley aircraft.
And what do you remember of that?
And that was 700 feet, I think that was. Yeah, that was very, very exhilarating, very nice. From that, though, we had to go out the side of the aircraft. The other one was quite easy. You just sat on the edge and push yourself out. This was going out the side of the aircraft. And there was a stick, I think it was about 12 or, I can't remember, 12, 20 men maybe, this stick of men. And as you approach the zone, you stand up, and your instructor will make sure that your parachute is hooked up to the static line that goes along. And he'll test the parachute, and you get to the door. As you get to the door, he'll put his hand on your shoulder, and you watch the green light. When the green light goes, he'll just tap you on the, doesn't push, he just taps you on the shoulder, the green light goes, and you just jump out. And that is very nice too. That is another thing which I can't understand why should have to go to a parachutist course, why would have to go to with the army training. This is not part. I've never known any aircrew, and I know a lot. I belong to the ACI and different organisations. Never known anybody who's had to do these courses. So why it was, I don't know. The only thing we can think of is we were going to operate with the SOE and we were given an insight as to what they do. I don't know whether that's right or not. But, that was all very interesting, but not the sort of thing we expected to do as aircrew.
Anything else about the heavy conversion unit?
No, from there...
Now, when did you leave there? That looks like...
about June, was it? May, I can't think.
It seems to have been there till about September. I'm not sure about that. So you go to 295 Squadron?
Yeah, when did I go to 295?
It looks like the 20th of September.
Oh, September. I didn't go there before, no.
It's difficult to tell from those.
Yeah. That is supposed to be an official record. It's not always right, though, so not always right. But
anything? So nothing else about 1665? About the heavy conversion?
No. It's just a matter of converting to Stirlings when Paddy was fully conversant with the Stirling. It was time to move on and time to go to an operational squadron. And 295 was the one we were posted to. Once again, within 38 Group. 38 Group was within Fire to Command, but also SOE was in 38 Group. So it does in one way all tie up to the fact of what we were doing and why we were sent on these. But we couldn't understand it.
Now, where were 295 Squadron based?
At that time, it was based at Harwell.
Essex.
Essex,
of course it is.
Yes, yeah.
And that was the September, we think, but we'll sort that out.
Yes.
And what were your first impressions of the squadron when you joined them and the unit you were joining?
It was a certain amount of excitement to get onto an operational squadron, especially after the time that I'd been training. I mean, we're talking about 1944, aren't we now? See, I went in 42. 44, it's a long, long while for training. And all these courses are on, of course, this all put me back, didn't it, on training. And I can't see why, I'm sure they didn't all do it, they couldn't have all done it, it wouldn't have been the time to do it in their course. But no, it was very nice. It was nice to get on your own squadron and eventually have your own aircraft.
Now, how were you received? What was your reception like?
Yes, very... very good indeed. All the fellows, you know, they all, oh, you're new to the squadron, that's nice, welcome in, you know, and pleased to have you here. And we used to pick their brains as to what was going on, what was happening, what were the jobs were to do, you know, what did they do, what was their main duties. Most of it was, a lot of it in the first place was exercise, but then it was exercises, we were towing a lot of gliders, it was exercises towing gliders, towing paratroops, all exercises involving.
Now this was just leading. Started then. You hadn't done this before.
No.
So
no.
Tell us what did this entail? You were in Stirling. Well, firstly, which Stirling were you in? Was it Mark 4?
I think there we were in a Mark 3. First of all, the Stirling, when we eventually got our own Stirling, it was a Mark 4. But I think eventually there was a Mark 3.
Now tell me about what were the new duties, because you were learning, again, a new thing. You were learning to tow gliders, I presume.
Yes, we were. But, you see, once again, the towing of gliders mainly depended on the glider pilot and the tug pilot, because they're the two who controlled each. I mean, the tug pilot, he was responsible for the tug in the fact that to make sure it was there, make sure that it hadn't cast off. The glider pilot was for the one to look after his not as much his crew members, but the equipment he was carrying and the people he was carrying, the troops he was carrying, you see, yeah. We used to do a lot of exercises, some glider towing, some not glider towing, but they were exercises to get to certain drop-in zones, to approach certain drop-in zones, flying at certain heights, because different dropping zones could have a different height.
Now, by dropping, you mean parachutists?
Yes, an area where you dropped either parachutes or supplies, whatever it was, you see, yes. Yeah. and the drop-in zone. You see, in an aircraft, you always set, I think they called it the QFE, I'm not sure, you always set that, the aircraft, when you leave the base, you set it to how far you are above sea level. Because when you get over different ground, that instrument tells you how far you are above sea level. And the only way you know how far you are above sea level on the map is it's written on the map. So you've got to be careful that both of these match up, the instrument matches up with the proper QFE.
So this is so with towing gliders, that really had nothing much to do with you, in essence.
Not really. No.
I mean,
no.
It's just. I mean, did it make a difference the way the airplane flew?
Oh, it did make a difference. Oh yes. It took longer to get off the ground. You see, there again, it depends. some of them towed two. I believe some of the smaller gliders they towed three of those. You see, the hawsers, they tow one or maybe two hawsers they tow, depending on what equipment the gliders had on as well. You see, if the aircraft was carrying, if they were carrying containers to be dropped, they obviously wouldn't have so much in the glider. I mean, a glider, I think it's about 29 troops, fully trained troops and fully armed, not armed, well, yes, what do they call them, troops, fully equipped troops, and or they could carry a howitzer gun, which was quite heavy. Yeah.
Now, when you're relocating exact dropping zones, mm-hmm. how much did the navigator and you work together? Because the wireless operators were starting to have a lot of navigational aids, weren't they?
Yes, they
were.
I'm
thinking of things like G and... H2S.
Yes. Very, very seldom did I have any reason at all to use those. You approach the drop-in zone. When you left the aircraft, when you left the airfield, you were given a height to fly. Right? Now, you fly that height until you got to within so many miles of your drop-in zone. And then you were given another height to fly. And you were then given also the height of your drop, you know, the height you got to be for where you drop. Now, when we got nearer to the dropping zone, now, the last one I did was to Norway.
Hang on, we're on training at the moment, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, the procedure is the same for training or for dropping, yeah, but... you'd go off. You've got the height to drop whatever you've got to drop. You're told where it is. You're given the drop-in zone, and you're given a time to drop it. You're given a time to arrive at the drop-in zone and a time you've got to leave. So therefore, in between, you've got to make this drop.
And this is what you were practicing.
Yes, that's right. Yes. It was timing and the dropping. When you approach the drop-in zone, the bomb aimer took over then. His compartment was in the front of the aircraft. He would lay down, he'd look through his perspex, you see through his perspex, and he would guide you. He could guide you better than anybody because you were down low. You could see houses, you could see farms, you could see rivers, you could see many things. And from his map, he could look at a map and that may be Mayhew's farm. And you'd think, oh, yeah, that is Mayhew's farm because it's got a stretch of water behind it. He would know exactly where he's going and he'd follow that in. And then he is the one to tell the pilot when he's getting near to the drop zone.
So you were training on both both towing gliders and locating the exact dropping zone and the being over them at the right time.
Right time, that is
so
it.
So precision
yes.
was very important.
Yes.
Anything
and
else about the
when
training?
When you arrived at the drop-in zone, you had a code, and you'd wait for the ground to give you a code, and if you got the right code, then you'd give them your code. If that was the right code, well, fair enough. Then you would drop. But maybe by then you've got a little bit too far to drop, so you'd have to make another run. Therefore, it means you give the code again. Now, the code in some circumstances, if you were too late, it could have changed because they used to change it, I think, about every half an hour, every three quarters of an hour or something, you see, so that if you were too late, you couldn't drop. You had to drop within a special time, and you had to drop to the code given to you and accepted by the ground. if you didn't give the right code, but of course the ground wouldn't give you a code back again. So therefore you'd just have to abort. You had no alternative but to abort.
Right, well, we'll come, obviously, when we run through a proper mission, we'll go through a lot of this. Anything else about your first training flights when you joined the squadron?
No, they were just ordinary flights. They didn't entail a lot, as I mentioned there. It's getting into the drop-in zone, dropping what to drop. And you see, it was all gauged. I mean, it's like the fuel you carried. You only carried enough fuel to do that drop, because it meant that you could perhaps have an extra container on board of ammunition for the people who wanted it, rather than have some spare petrol when you came back.
Were you trained in what? Were you told at all about what you were carrying for the? Did you know about the SOE?
No, this is all loaded before. Only once did we know what we were carrying, and that was because we were the dispatchers.
Hang on, you're on missions again then. I mean, were you told in training what you were doing? You know, when you did the training flights with them, did they explain? We run through a complete mission, you see, when we start there. So what we're talking about now is the training.
Yes.
You had a couple of weeks of training before you went on mission. So did they then explain to you who the SOE were and what sort of things you'd be carrying and what the purpose of the squadron was?
No. You knew you'd be carrying, like, supplies, equipment. You didn't know what it would be. No.
Now, when was your first operation then?
Oh, good question. Very good question. The first one I can remember was a daylight one. And it was over France.
What was that? Or was that pulling gliders?
Oh, I don't know whether that was... I can't think of the code name of that now. No. It was over France. And it was a daylight one. It was a very, very nice day when we left. Very nice indeed. We found the drop-in zone, signalled the drop-in zone, got the correct one back again. By this time, we had to overshoot, so we overshot. When we got the signal, we just got a signal. We could see nothing anywhere at all, just a signal, which is what you wanted. And we gave the signal, it was right. So we went round. When we came back, the whole field was covered with mostly horse and carts, hand bearers, people. The whole area was covered. And we went, Jack and I went back and we opened the trap door in the bottom of the aircraft. We pushed out the line that stopped the static lines from getting around the tower wheel. And we pushed these containers out. They were wicker baskets. We pushed these out. And there was one bundle of tyres. I can remember this because when it went down, because we could see out of this hole in the bottom, we could see the people. We could see pushing it out. We could see the people, you know, as we were pushing it out. And we pushed out. And we saw this bundle of tyres go down and hit the ground. I don't know if the chute opened in time, or it didn't know. It hit the ground and you could see a whole, like a bomb burst, you know. And anyway, we went up. And as we went up, I got in the Astrodome and had a look around. And I could see the people there scurrying around this field and moving all this stuff. And we went up and Paddy said, I think we'll give them a shoot up before we go back home. We went up and we came round and it came down very, very low. There was nothing in the field at all. Not one horse, cart, absolutely nothing. There was a few shops on a road there, and people were all waving to us like this, waving, shouting. Well, at least we assumed they were shouting, you know. And we were very, very pleased that we dropped it. And that was the French resistance, was it? Yes, yeah. And that's the only time that we did have a drop, strange enough, the only time.
That was the only
one we did have a drop. Yes, yeah.
On
the other ops, no, we didn't have any success at all. No, because well, that's another thing that has to do with the ops. This is not on the ops, is it?
No, we are now on the ops.
Oh, we are now. Oh, I'm righto. Yeah.
So, what were causing the problems with the ops that you went on?
Well, it could be many things. Mainly weather. Weather was the big bugbear. You see. we would only fly if it was clear sky. And we needed clear sky because we were down low. You see, flying 700 feet was very, very low.
So there's weather. What other problems? Or was that the main problem?
Well, if we didn't get the right signal, if there was no signal at all, we obviously didn't drop. If we didn't get the right signal, we wouldn't drop.
So the signals from the dropping zone?
On the dropping zone, yes.
So all the other missions you flew that were either bad weather or no signals? Now, are there any other missions you remember in particular before? I mean, I don't know how many you went on
Not very many. I think about eight, I think it was about the most. I think seven, eight, I think, nine. See, it was, I got on the station in September, and that was November.
It was not long.
No. Wasn't on there very long, was I?
So well, what we'll do is look at a typical mission which picks up all the things, you know. So when you were going on a mission, when would you be first told that you were going on?
You'd go to the briefing room in the mornings. Mainly this was a routine. You go to the briefing rooms in the morning, and then you may be told there's a briefing tonight for Finlay, Sloan, sounds like the pilots' names, you see. And be a briefing at the time. You would attend the briefing room.
Now, hang on, before, so you're told in the morning, was there any preparation or anything you had to do in the meantime before the briefing?
Well, no, you were just told there's a briefing. You weren't told it's an op, there's a briefing.
So you didn't have to do an air test or anything like that?
No. Well, you were told there's a briefing, you see. When you enter the briefing room, there's a briefing for so-and-so at such and such a time, and that's it. You say, well, so when you went for this briefing, right, you were told then this briefing is for Operation so-and-so at such and so-and-so, and maybe two or three of you would be going, so it'd be saying so-and-so are involved in this briefing, right? That's what they would tell you. And in the meantime, you'd probably hear nothing else. They'd say, right, return here at maybe 4 o'clock, you see. And in the meantime,